This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Tuesday, 30th of November, 2021, and we have some very choppy markets here. Extreme headline risk, as we're seeing overnight and as we saw yesterday in the big comeback from Friday's illiquid session in reaction to the Omicron outbreak, Omicron variant of the COVID virus outbreak, where we saw markets buoyed by, probably mostly by Powell saying that this emergence of this COVID virus, a new variant of the COVID virus, could affect both of the Fed's mandates. So the classic Fed put, people, pre-celebrating the anticipation of that, as well President Biden saying there will be no new lockdowns. And there was even a Pfizer director out, one that looks like he's thoroughly involved in the revolving door of being in a prominent position in the U.S. government, and now is with Pfizer, saying something that was positive along the lines of believing in these vaccines' effectiveness with the new variant. And then we get this headline overnight that suddenly craters confidence once again from Moderna CEO. I would parenthetically say this is somebody who's talking his book, and to me these comments look almost irresponsible. Sayings and the type of language here I really find irresponsible. He's saying stuff like, quote, there's no world where the effectiveness is going to be as along the same lines as the prior round, and then talking about some discussion with others as quote, this is not going to be good. So obviously the market not liking this, we're all nervous here, but we just, the main thing to underline is we don't know anything about the transmissibility, virulence, or the vaccine evasion yet. And we won't know on the last item for another 2 to 6 weeks, according to some of these vaccine companies' own words on the estimated timeline. So extreme market volatility, two-way risk, got to underline that. Peter, too much of a lead in there, but I think it's just trying to set the tone for what's going on here. And we're seeing a very different setup in the U.S. equity market back and forth there relative to Europe, which looks very heavy to me.
Europe is very heavy this morning. But just quickly on slide two, I mean, you have put in the S&P 500 futures right there. Obviously, the lows from earlier in this session and the lows from Friday, obviously, that area there, I think, represents the natural support level. And if we let go of those levels, I think we'll quickly move down much more in the S&P 500. And yesterday, you saw the mega caps and semiconductors on the upside, and you had the 3D printing, e-commerce, and bubble stocks on the flip side of that, leading the declines lower for that area of the market. I think mega caps will probably increasingly be a safe haven on a relative speaking. And then, as we said before, it's when you have these headline news coming in, I think the immediate trade that all traders are trading right now is the spread of technology stocks versus physical companies. So the Nasdaq 100, the ones that are in biotechnology, online companies, software, everything that can be run without, run even with, disturbances in our physical world. And we have seen that throughout the pandemic. And then you have the Stoxx 50 and Europe, which has a value tilt and has a tilt toward these physical companies, much more heavy weight on financials, energy, industrials, etc. And you can see here on slide three, these are the 5 minutes chart. It's normalized. So you can see the percentage change. So Nasdaq 100 is unchanged over the past 10 trading days. And you have Stoxx 50 down 8%. So I think that really encapsulates what is the trade that is being traded here. So have a look at that if you're into the intraday trading.
Yeah, and I'm sure those mega caps absolutely loving the Powell comments yesterday. Could not be better. And we have to remember what a whiplash this is from where we were less than a week ago, where we're talking about acceptance speeches from Powell and Brainard, where they clearly promoted inflation, likely in conversation with Biden, that inflation needs to be more prominent in their rhetoric and guarding against inflation. We're just in a completely different place all of a sudden. But what if the Omicron fears fade just suddenly? Then we're back to the prior set of fears, and those things you mentioned could very well reverse where the market is focusing on relative strength. Anyway, I think one thing perspective-wise we need to underline here as well is this is the market is in a very different place in reaction terms than where it was around the Delta outbreak. So the Omicron variant is dominating headlines, but the lay of the land of the market is in a completely different category. If we look on slide four, it's our global risk indicator with a number of inputs. including importantly market volatility, which is far higher than it was back in July when there was a very, very brief wipeout linked to the Delta variant. And then importantly, we're starting to see these corporate credit spreads widening quite dramatically. And in fact, something like the ETFs, the most traded ETFs, they're probably used often as hedges, but in any case, were punched to new lows for the whole year on Friday. Of course, a sharp rebound yesterday, and you see some of that rebound on the chart on slide four. But the market, and I'll say in your space, so these corporate spreads, they're widening quite aggressively. They're not quite at the widest levels they've been in 2021, but the credit space is in a different place than it was or has been in quite some months.
Absolutely. And the main catalyst, John, was the sell-off that we have seen in markets on Friday. Indeed, only on Friday, the high-yield corporate spreads widened 30 basis points from around 300 basis points to 330. And although 330 is still within the average of a normal average for a high yield corporate spreads, what is worrying is the pace at which it has been widening. And you can see that on slide number five. Now we are talking about the same spread that we are seeing around March last year. It will be safe, John, to assume that we are going to see credit spreads continuing to widen throughout December for the simple reason that the market will have to deal with a lack of liquidity on the last month of the year. And if volatility in rates continues to be this dramatic, then it can accelerate that trend.
Yeah, and also I think one interesting thing to me was that the spreads were widening a bit. There was no sense of emergency, but sort of widening a bit towards their multi-month highs. I think around the Fed, the fears of the Fed tightening. Now we have an entirely different set of fears. So it will be interesting to see how those spreads continue to develop from here. And so, you know, we're seeing all this concern in the market, what to do. Well, there's the idea that we've talked about it, of course, of reducing your exposure to the market. But one can also keep positions and look at ways to hedge it through disaster insurance. That can be anything from trading optionality in something like the short-term interest rates, the idea that if this goes really badly, the market will have to reprice where the Fed will be somewhere down the road. You can get options that expire within weeks on that front. Or you can look at something like, puts on the stock market itself. Those are very pricey, but it's tradable. And then something like dollar yen, which does appear to be trading as a kind of a disaster insurance. I just put up this is not an encouragement to trade this specific put option, but it's just for perspective. You can see on slide six where the implied volatility is for 1 month dollar yen. That's the black line at the highest for the range since the pandemic outbreak months there back in early 2020. And that little orange line is the so-called risk reversal, or what you're paying up for basically for puts, which are more expensive because these are the disaster insurance, seen as the disaster insurance direction. So they are for a 10 delta put a lot more expensive than for calls. But not a 10 delta, but a somewhat lower delta put would be something. For example, if we are going to see something developing around Omicron, we'll probably know within a few weeks given this timeline for the vaccine news and whether we're going to have to wait 6 months for new vaccine rounds, etc. So something like a 111.50 dollar yen put costs around a little over half a figure. It's just one of those ways to potentially have some hedge for some downside risk there, when markets can get very illiquid and gap-like in the way they're trading. And so you see on slide seven, the dollar yen chart there, once again, trading much like the direction and risk sentiment generally. I think that'll continue to be the case as the yen is seen as a safe haven when yields are collapsing, and also when positioning was completely the wrong way around for very different reasons heading into this whole episode of volatility. All right, let's get back to fixed income, because the US treasuries are repricing, the situation. Obviously, Alcea, you're noticing, or you're noting, the extreme flattening of the curve here, and you're expecting that to continue?
Absolutely. The thing is that the massive rally that we have seen in bonds on Friday has been caused by the fact that the market had to reprice interest rate hikes for next year. We closed on Thursday with market pricing nearly three interest rate hikes for 2022. We closed Friday where the market was pricing slightly more than two. And today, the market is pricing a little bit less than two. So that has provoked yields to collapse and to pin down, especially the front part of the yield curve. And that's why we didn't see the 2 year yield moving much from Friday until today. However, there is something to consider, John, which is while we are talking about a new COVID outbreak, supply chain bottlenecks remain there. And if there are new restrictions, that would make them even worse. So it means that inflation can even become worse than what we have today. So it is safe to assume that the Federal Reserve will not be as hawkish as we were expecting at the beginning of last week, but will not be as dovish as we have seen in others' COVID outbreak. So what does that mean? It means that the short part of the yield curve will remain high. Instead, the long part of the yield curve will need to reprice according to a new expectations of an economic slowdown or contraction. So it means that either it remains stable or it falls, which implies more bear flattening of the yield curve or even an inversion.
Right. And of course, assuming that the news gets worse before it gets better. And I guess, and then of course, on the EU front, though, as risk sentiment worsens, we're seeing the periphery not enjoying things. What's the perspective there?
Well, European yields are compressed by COVID distortions, in the meaning that the COVID outbreak in Europe is the only element that is compressing yields at the moment. And last week on Friday, when we have seen yields dropping, we have seen also yields of those government bonds with a high beta, such as Italy, falling. And that's the sign that basically the market anticipates the ECB to be extremely dovish and continue with accommodative measures. But the problem here is that also in Europe, we are seeing inflationary pressures increasing. Yesterday, we have seen the German inflation up to 6%. In Italy, the producer price index, the monthly figure was near 10%. So it's safe to assume that European yields will remain compressed until these COVID distortions will be eased. And once they will be eased, we might see yields resume their rise amid inflationary worries and also the German elections.
All right. It'll be interesting to watch how this the market assesses things. I did note yesterday that while the equity market was rallying in spots, that the U.S. Treasury market was suggesting a very different sort of spin on things at the long end of the curve. So, all right, let's look at where the stock market is focusing, especially in terms of themes and stories and the narrative. What's got your attention today, Peter?
Before I go that, I wanted to interrupt you earlier in the presentation, because I've been thinking, and maybe if I'm thinking and others are also thinking, what is the reason why this our global risk indicator on slide four, why it is almost on par with the tumble we had in this indicator back in March of last year when we were at the low point of the pandemic. What's really driving? Because I think it seems quite...
It's a poor... first of all, it's poor for comparing relative episodes.
Okay.
But secondly, you have to look at these are standard deviations. So something that just... And the degree of quiet relative to the acceleration in risk off. So we had a very, okay, very, very ugly acceleration for a single day, whereas there was back then, and it's all relative to a moving average. So it's a great question. And you know, it's a test of the quality of this indicator. And I would argue,
not necessarily, it's just mostly, interpretation.
No, but no, it's a very good question. And it does point some weaknesses perhaps in the indicator, but there's just other ways to interpret it. And if you look back at that episode, there was a slide and things were getting worse. And then they got really bad, really fast from already pretty bad levels. Mm. Whereas this has been, we're sort of at market highs and very quiet levels. And then suddenly we get a huge one day acceleration that takes the spot reading, if you will, so far away from the moving average very suddenly. And so the standard deviation sensitivity, it was coming from a different place. So that's
Okay.
That's the somewhat short and
but that makes sense. That makes sense. So we were in an extremely calm period, and then it snapped very quickly, and that's why you get that explosive reading.
Yeah.
All right. Slide 10, stocks to watch. Obviously, the travel baskets, I've put that in as well. I think Volvo Cars, it's just, you know, they just recently went public, and they are out with their first earnings result. Shares down 4% the last time I checked. One interesting fact about it, so one thing is that they're making less money and was not as impressive as expected, but I think their battery electric vehicles, so they're fully what they call fully electric vehicles, is only 4% of sales, which is roughly right now around 50,000 cars per month. So we're looking at a company that is producing right now 2,000 EVs per month, and the reason why which is 25,000 a year. So the reason why I'm mentioning this is because I wrote about the car industry yesterday, and when you look at the ramp up profile of Tesla and Volkswagen, and even some of these Chinese companies like XPeng, NIO, and Li Auto yesterday reported 25,000 deliveries in one quarter. Right, so that's, you know, that's 8,000 a month. So already four times as much as Volvo, and this is a new car company. Volkswagen has been around. It just tells you the innovative destruction that is going on inside the car industry right now. I mean, 4% of sales for Volvo is just simply not good enough. And I mean, they're going to be taking over if they're not getting out of the starting block. And the same goes for all the other traditional car companies. Anyway, you can read my piece on the car industry. One of my key takeaways is I think for Volkswagen and some of the other traditional car makers to survive, I think they need to contemplate spinning off their electric vehicle units, separate listings, still having the majority ownership, but getting a sky high valuation, which you can get on a pure EV exposure, and then raise lots of capital and drive that growth. Because right now you have employees producing the old cars that are fighting the change. So that's my take, at least. Go read that. I've listed in the text. And then, of course, Moderna and BioNTech obviously are key ones to watch today. And John is flagging a paper here saying Twitter, why didn't you put it in? And sorry for that. We have Jack Dorsey, the founder and CEO, yesterday announced that he's stepping down from day-to-day operations. He will remain with the board for the rest of 2022, and then it seemed like he'll be gone for the company. I think it's a very good thing for Twitter going forward. There is so much potential for grabbing market share. I think they have a social media platform that is quite distinct from other social media platforms, and they have a lot of fat on their bone in terms of employees. So I think there's tremendous upside for improving profitability. And then I've highlighted China Gas, down 28% in today's trading. So if you like to trade Hong Kong names, there might be a continued sell-off tomorrow. Quickly, slide 11. The key earnings to watch today is Salesforce. I think the focus will be very much on the operating margin side of things because their sales growth is just so robust, and it's just such a phenomenal growth trajectory. So it's all about the margins, which have come down for two straight quarters. They need to get that around, and they right now trying to integrate Slack and other acquisitions. And then I've put in just the updated figures from Li Auto yesterday, so you can see how these three Chinese EV makers, how they're ramping up production.
Hopefully not charging the cars on coal burning. Otherwise, I'm beginning to wonder what the climate a little bit. But I mean, it is a valid question if you're charging your cars based on dirty CO2. Anyway, today important is the Powell and Secretary Yellen testimony on the CARES Relief Act. But of course, the interest is the questioning around what's going on right now. And I think Althea did a great job of outlining the dilemma for the Fed here, where the policy options are not the same. The menu there is very different from what it was in March of 2020. So very little they can do, I think, on the easing side. And then, you know, what does that mean for markets if they get that message, as we're all waiting and wondering here over coming weeks? Liquidity could risk getting poor. I think we've highlighted the degree to the difference of risk off here. So you can see all the bits and pieces on slide 12 of the different risk events today. Again, I think the market is very much in headline mode here. Risk of big moves, I think that's clear enough from what's going on in the market. We'll see where things stand tomorrow after another 24 hours of this with tomorrow's Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.